This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there and a very happy new year to you. I'm Georgia Tolley and I stood in for Helen Farmer on Afternoons this week. And we had a little bit of a focus on literature. We spoke to Alam Baluki. Now she's the director of the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. She told us about all the latest news, including their author lineup. We also had a Meet the Author session that was with the fantastic debut novelist Saba Karim Khan, talking all about her new novel, which is called Skyfall. Then we had a bit of a roundup at the best books of the year, thanks to Flora Rees, who is also head of programming at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Yesterday, to much fanfare, the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature announced their much-anticipated author lineup for 2021.
Home or away?
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
To discuss that and all the other fun activities that the festival is planning to host, I'm joined now on the line by the festival director, Alam Baluki. Thank you so much. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. I actually missed the announcement yesterday because I was live on air, so I wasn't able to come down to the event or watch it digitally. I suppose my first question is that it's quite extraordinary that the event is taking place in person. It's thanks, I suppose, to the UAE being so open, but it must be one of the only literature festivals in the whole world that's going ahead in person next year.
Yeah, I think we probably are one of the first. And, you know, all of this year we've been planning very hopefully going through the unknowns, not knowing where things were going to lead, just monitoring the situation day by day. But we stayed optimistic. We adapted to the times and we were delighted by the end of the summer when we sent invites to the authors from all over the world at how positively the invitation was received. I think, you know, a lot of them wanted something to look forward to in the new year, and there was actually many more authors who would have liked to come but are unable to fly because of travel restrictions in their countries right now, and then some who will be with us physically and some who will be with us virtually. But it's an amazing program. Regardless of if the authors are here physically or virtually, we will still have a physical event so audiences can come in person and the moderator will be on stage in person. And, you know, depending on whether it's a solo or a panel session, you know, and some of the panels have some authors there physically and some virtually. So we're doing a really nice blend where, you know, the atmosphere will still be there. You can still come down to the Lit Fest and experience the program in the best possible way.
I guess the just some of the cues for the author signings will have to be longer because you'll do the sort of 2 meter gap. They'll be out the door because with some of the authors because they're so popular. Who are your top names?
Well, we've got a lot of literary greats this year. We've been really fortunate. You know, we have Amin Maalouf on the program. We've got Elif Shafak on the program, who everybody knows as the author of many books, but most popularly 40 Rules of Love, and her most recent book, 10 Minutes and 38 Seconds in the Strange World. We've got Bolu Bavalola. We've got Oyinkan Braithwaite of My Sister, the Serial Killer. We've got so many incredible names. We've got Thomas Erickson of Surrounded by Idiots. Just some incredible, Derek Owusu, some fantastic names on the program.
And so when is it actually taking place? Because you've made a few changes with the scheduling as well, haven't you?
Yes, we have. So for the first time, the festival will be taking place over 3 weekends and 3 different destinations. So the opening weekend will be at Jameel Arts Center in Al-Jaddaf on the Friday and Saturday. The second weekend will be at the Intercontinental Festival City over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, like we're used to seeing the festival. And then the final weekend will take place at El Serkal Avenue. We really wanted to come together as an arts community to make sure that the cultural offering of Dubai is really going to thrive, and that we make sure that after this difficult year, the festival can be stronger than ever and going to where the cultural audiences are, whether it's at the Intercon or these amazing arts and culture partners like Art Jamila Serkal. We have a common goal, and it just makes perfect sense for us to partner and do this. So we're really excited. They have some, you know, they have beautiful spaces where they are and some outdoor options as well. So we're trying to have more outdoor venues next year too, even at the Intercon.
Wow. And I suppose that makes perfect sense because it's always, everything is always so much safer outdoors. And it's all in February, isn't it? Which is a beautiful month of the year here.
So starting 29th of January, that's the Art Jamila weekend, and ending on the 13th of February. So over those three sort of weekends.
I think it's,
the weather is perfect at that time too.
It is. It's not half term, which for a long time tended to be misty. But last year wasn't. I always invite friends to come over for half term, and then the weather's not that good for that specific half term, that specific week. But no, it's gorgeous around that at this time of year. And obviously, I mean, you are changing the programme because of COVID-19 slightly. You've mentioned a few of the measures that you're introducing there, things like some of the authors will be joining digitally. You're going to host some of them outside. What other measures have you introduced to make sure that it's all safe and sound?
Yeah, so obviously everyone's temperatures will be checked before entering the venue. All of the team, the LitFest team, will be tested every 48 hours to make sure that interacting with the authors and audiences will be totally safe. There will be masks are mandatory at all times. Hand sanitizers will be available everywhere. And we will be sanitizing between one session and the next. So there's actually an hour and a half gap between two sessions in one room.
Oh, cool. And then
there will be limited tickets and seats. So you won't see as many seats as you normally see in each session. So we really advise people to book in advance because the capacities are slightly more limited and the seats will be more staggered. The seats will be numbered as well. So you would have been used to booking a LitFest ticket and then sitting first come, first serve anywhere you like. But next year, or in, you know, next month.
Oh my gosh, it's so soon.
I know. When booking your tickets, you're going to be selecting specific seats and sitting where you've selected, just like you would at the cinema. And then we've got isolation rooms for anyone who's showing symptoms to make sure that they come straight there and don't interact with the general public. So yeah, and much more. So we're really, you know, we're following DHA rules every day. We monitor any changes, and all international authors will be tested before getting on the plane.
All the usual good stuff that makes everybody feel safe, basically. last question for you, Will, because I know my children are finally getting to the right age to come along to the Literature Festival. Will you still be doing children's events?
We are. We're doing children's events, which families can come to at their own leisure, but we are not having a physical education program where, you know, you would have seen in the past school buses arriving, you know, every 10 minutes coming in for big education sessions. That aspect of our program will no longer be happening, but we will still have some children's authors, which parents can choose to bring their children to at their leisure in a sort of more controlled environment.
And one of the subjects that was that I looked into a lot last year was the extraordinary access that two authors who attended the Literature Festival were given to go into the prisons here in the UAE to teach literature, teach writing to a select group of prisoners. Is that project going ahead as well, or has that one had to be curtailed because of COVID slightly?
No, it's still going ahead. In fact, on the 3rd of February, we are going to have a festival in the prison for the inmates, a full day of programming for the inmates, which has not been done before. It'll be the first of its kind, and we're very, very excited to be doing this for them.
You're going to have to invite us down to that. that just sounds like, I mean, I went to the launch of the book, Tomorrow I Will Fly, last year. Yeah. It was the most extraordinary.
Emotional.
Yeah, I've never been to anything so powerful in my entire life. It changed every single one of my preconceptions about prisoners, about writing, about the importance of literature. It is the most extraordinary program.
Absolutely. It's an honor. It's a privilege to be in the position to be able to do so, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely amazing how the Literature Festival and the foundation works with the prison service here in order to make that happen. I don't think it would happen in very many other countries. Amazing to speak to you. And it sounds like, as ever, the festival is going to be absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. That's Ahlam Baluki. She's the festival director, obviously, of the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. All kicks off in nearly exactly a month. Make sure you go visit the website if you want to start booking tickets now.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are keeping our attention on books and authors this afternoon as we welcome author Saba Karim Khan to the show.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, Saba is an instructor in the social science division at NYU Abu Dhabi, and she's recently completed her debut fiction novel, which is called Skyfall. It's slated for publication by Bloomsbury, really good publisher, in January 2021, and the novel is already receiving favourable reviews from international publications. There's nothing we like more than throwing our weight and support behind a local author. So, Saba, thank you for joining us on the line.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the line. A very happy new year. Get me through a sort of little synopsis of your book that's coming out next year.
Yeah, so, I mean, Skyfall is basically the story of two people, Rania and Asher. And it's set sort of between Lahore, Delhi, and New York. And it follows their lives as they reckon with, I think, a really perilous, uncertain future in a world that I think is approaching an especially dangerous point. And what I mean with that is that it's moving apart and tearing at the seams as quickly as it's kind of coming closer. So I think in that sense, I see the novel as a celebration of humanity, almost in a sense allowing us to imagine a world that has transcended some of these man-made chains that we forged around ourselves and kind of carved out a space for coexistence. I think that's the big idea behind the novel.
Wow. It sounds like it works on a number of levels, because I've also read about how it's a mystery and a thriller and a real page turner.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when Bloomsbury and I sent it out for the early kind of blurbs from other authors in the community, it was interesting because I think one thing, the thread that ran through a lot of those reviews was that, oh, it's a romance and, you know, it's talking about a lot of the pressing issues of our times, but yet it also seems like it's almost a suspense and, you know, a page turner in that sense. I think a thriller, which I'm not sure I set out to do, but it seems like that has ended up happening. But I think it's interesting. The other question I get asked a lot is, why this title? Mm. And in that sense, I feel like Skyfall, I don't know if the listeners know this, but Skyfall literally means the last attempt that you make against a group of people when you're outnumbered. And so I think in that sense, that spirit really crystallizes the world of the book. And I think that's why I'm hoping that it works in a more universal sort of language, as opposed to it works agnostic to our race and color and, you know, all of those other kind of man-made borders that we have.
How long did it take you to write it? Has it been, because obviously you also work as an instructor in social sciences, so you have a day job. How did you fit in the writing?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. I mean, I have to say that I think there was a very, very particular moment in time when when kind of the seeds of Skyfall were kind of took root. I remember this distinctly. I think it was the winter of 2017, and I was sitting in a class at NYU. And we had a guest speaker who was the headmaster from a school in England. And he was speaking to the students and to us, and he quoted something which really kind of stopped me in my tracks. And It said something like, most men and women lead lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with the song still in them. And he said, he asked everyone, what is your song? Take 5 minutes and scribble your song on a piece of paper and share it with the person sitting next to you. And to have to say, it wasn't simple kind of conjuring up something that felt so important right there on the spot, because, you know, in addition to these tall pipe dreams of writing my debut novel, I also have two very tiny daughters who were kind of, you know, vying for me. But I think still, that said, the headmaster's words really shifted something fundamentally within me that morning. And I think the seeds of Skyfall were sown. I think it really spurred me to kind of try and unearth my song, so to speak. And I think that's kind of the spirit behind it, really.
Do you feel great now it's down on paper and it's about to be published? What's it like to first open the box and see the cover and pull out the book and smell it?
Yeah, I know. It's funny you say that, because I put up a post just like a couple of days ago when I got my first copy of it from Bloomsbury. And I think smelling it was really one of the top things I did, because I was like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, my sister was asking me this on the phone yesterday, and I said, she's like, how do you feel? And I said, I really feel like, I guess it's hard to process when you physically look at it. I've looked at the typeset when it came to me online. But I think the physical copy, the first time you hold it, it's sort of like, is this really mine? Like, you know, you feel like it's so many different emotions, I suppose, right? So
yeah.
I think part of me is still very numb about it, but it's a very exciting time. And I think I've been surprised that a publisher like Bloomsbury has been so receptive to a new voice. You know, I was always told like the probability of publishing and publishing fiction for the first time is dangerously low. But I think it's made me realize that they're very receptive to a new voice, a woman of color. Like, there's so many things to it, which I think pleasantly surprised me, really.
Absolutely amazing. Oh, look, someone's just written in saying, oh, that was a gem. Please, could you repeat what the headmaster said?
Yes, sure. I have to say, I think I felt it was a gem as well. And he said, it's actually someone else's quote, which he was quoting, and I'm forgetting the name of the original. I think we could just Google it. But he said something like, most men and women lead lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with the song still in them. And he said, what's your song? Can everybody just take 5 minutes and write their song? And I think that morning I just felt like, I didn't know Skyfall was going to be my song, but I think storytelling was going to be my song in any shape, way or form.
Absolutely extraordinary. Right now, now we've spoken a sort of bit more about your book and how you came about writing. I'd like to know about your life in literature. Which book have you reread the most times? Which book is the sort of one that really stands out in your life that someone else has written?
Yeah, I think the one that's really at the top of my head, I think the one that I've read the most number of times has to be Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
Oh, yeah.
And I think my mother gave that to me when I was maybe 14, and it sort of became a constant companion. I can't remember how many times I've read it, and I think it ranks amongst her favorites too. And I think the reason I say that is because apart from the fact that it's this really powerful kind of, it's obviously a very compelling book in terms of plot and characters, and it's delivering like a cavalcade of really important themes. But I think beyond that, what I found really compelling about it was that it stripped all the formulas that we typically expect to conform to when we're storytelling. The author's just, I think Daphne du Maurier is just having a ball messing with the reader, you know, and you're thinking, how do I slop this book? Is it a romance? Is it a thriller? Is it a tragedy? And I think it was the fact that it's messy, it's complex, it's full of contradictions in terms of its protagonist and its plot. And I think the fact that it doesn't follow this sanitized arc is what really spoke to me. It kind of smashed all those preconceived notions of storytelling that we have in our head. And I think I loved it because of that.
Do you know, you've made me want to read it again, because I read it as a teenager as well. And it really sort of, you know how when you're going through puberty and you're going through your teens, you know, everything feels quite sort of dark. And it's quite a tricky novel to read when you're going through that sort of stage of life. And so I quite like to read it as a sort of slightly more stable adult and see what I, you know, which different strands I draw out of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of times we see a film which is made on a book, and so many have been made on this, and you're kind of always comparing and thinking what's better, you know, maybe the film is visually more compelling. But I think it's one of those which it's really stayed with me, and so I've got my mom to thank for that.
So how about what's on your bedside table right now? We've all got that pile of books that we haven't managed to get to. What are you hoping to read over the next sort of couple of weeks?
Yeah, so if I have to come really clean with you, and this doesn't sound like a super intelligent answer, but I have a ton of Julia Donaldson children's books right now because I've got two really small daughters who are obsessed with the Gruffalo and the unicorns. But no, seriously, I think right now what I've started already is this book that is called Dreamers. It's by an Indian author, by Poonam. She's a journalist based in Delhi, and it's kind of about how young Indians are really changing the world. And she's kind of traveled across different parts of India and looking at how this really young population is transforming, you know, one of the largest populations in the world. And so I've started Dreamers. It's written almost, I think the style is also interesting because it's obviously nonfiction, yet stylistically it reads almost like you're reading a piece of fiction. So I think it's showing how connectivity and technology is really, really spurring the ambition and power and access of young Indians. So that's what's on my bedside right now.
Looks really good. Yeah, so the New York Review of Books describes it as a superbly reported study of aspiration Indian millennials and one of the best books about Modi's India to date. I will definitely be adding that to my list. And now we focus instead on the book that you disliked the most, Sabah. Which was the latest novel you basically just quit on halfway through?
Yeah, so I was going to say, and I'm not being politically correct with saying this, but I don't think I've quit. And I think the reason why I've not actually quit a novel is that I guess I'm really mindful of the fact, even before I started writing Skyfall, I was mindful of the fact that every book can't speak to everyone, and you can't set out to please everyone, you know. And so that typical good, bad, ugly label that we cast is hard to do on something that's creative and subjective. But more importantly, I have to say that I think just the fact that someone's written an entire book cover to cover, more so now that I witnessed the process firsthand, but even earlier,
yeah,
I think I have deep appreciation for that. I mean, the easiest thing to do as an armchair critic is to rip that creative endeavor apart in a matter of seconds. But it's someone, you know, I don't know, I see it as someone's years of blood, sweat and tears. It's someone's song, like I was saying.
Yeah.
So that's not to say every book I've ever read has spoken to me, but a lot of times if I've got a lukewarm reaction to it, I think what sees me through the book is the fact that it opens up a window into someone else's world and into someone else's song. And I think that's what sees me through it. So I can't really remember having quit something halfway through.
How did you find the process when you were writing? Did you find it difficult to get other authors' sort of tones or styles out of your mind? I would always worry that if I was reading a great novel at the same time, that I would somehow reflect it in my own writing.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, a lot of writers will say, "Oh, we've read a lot of other people's work, and it's been inspiring, and all of that stuff." And I have to say that I imagine subliminally the authors whose work really speaks to me and resonates with me probably does kind of in some ways mirror in my own work. But that said, I think when you do start putting pen to paper, everyone does have a distinctive style, and somewhere I think. I think as a woman from the global south, there's a distinct voice that's almost desperate to be reclaimed. You know, that's not reclaimed enough. And I think I'm hoping and I believe that that's something that comes out in a book like Skyfall. So I think that's probably what gives it its uniqueness.
Do you have a list of books that you really want to read? You know, the classics that you've been trying to get to for years. And obviously with two small daughters, I'm afraid you might not get to for another few years.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one that I have read before, but that I really want to go back to, I haven't in a while now, is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee.
I'm really embarrassed to admit I haven't read that either, which is
oh really?
Oh, it's so naughty. I mean, I did English literature at university. I should have at least I should have turned my attention to it then when I had 4 hours of lectures a week and very little else to do.
I think, you know, I mean, my first sort of exposure to it was during my O-level years in Pakistan, where I'm from, as part of the English literature O-level curriculum. And so I think, and I really want to revisit it. I have Between Then and Now, but I feel like, again, it spoke to me because it was so ahead of its times. I feel it's one of those books that everybody should read. It was published in 1960, and yet it seems like it was so prophetic, you know, be that in terms of the issues of race and color that we're seeing, or Islamophobia, or whatever that might be. And I feel like, I think the reason why I would really coax you to read it is probably also because of the fact that whilst it didn't downsize all of those problems and it shoved us into these dark spaces, I think the beauty of it was that it kept hope kind of front and center, and it allowed us to imagine a world where we could coexist, a better world. In that sense, it made that move from darkness to light. And, you know, there's a quote from it which really stuck in my head, and I think you'll enjoy it. And it was something like, there was a man who was explaining the idea of courage to his 9-year-old daughter, and he said something like, courage is not a man with a gun in his hand. It's knowing you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway and you see it through no matter what. And so in that sense, I feel like there's a takeaway for so many of us, even in the present scenario, you know, to kind of say that's what real courage probably looks like.
Absolutely wonderful line for us to end that interview on. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed this chat.
Oh, have a very happy new year. And that's Saba Karim Khan, an instructor of social science at NYU Abu Dhabi. But most importantly, for the sake of this interview, she is author of the upcoming novel Skyfall. It comes out in January, published by Bloomsbury. It's described as a tender, piercing debut that teaches us the strength of human endeavor and our desire for love in a time of hate. Definitely something to add to your reading list for the new year.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So, what has been your favourite book of the year? I've had two, actually. Mine was Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens, and the Booker Prize winner from last year, which is called Girl, Woman, Other, by Bernardine Evaristo. But I'd love to hear yours. Send them in, 4001, or download and use the free Messenger app. I've got a few days off next week. I wouldn't mind starting my year off right with a decent selection of books. And I have to say, one of my favourite things of the year is reading Famous Figures' Top 10 list, in particular when it comes to literature. Obviously, they do them for films and things like that as well. Barack Obama's one of my go-tos, in part because he doesn't just recommend those sort of highfalutin, really intelligent books. He's also a fan of a really good novel. I haven't read any of his this year. He announced 17 titles on Twitter. They include Anne Applebaum's Twilight of Democracy. That sounds quite serious. The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson. And he also liked Homeland Elegies, Memorial Hidden Valley Road, and Cast. And joining me now to add to a list of books that you might already have that's far too long is Flora Rees. Now, she's head of programming for the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. So she's in that fortunate position where it is her job to read books. Hi, Flora. How are you doing?
Hi, George. I'm very well. It's lovely to be speaking to you today.
It's a pleasure. I covet your role. Because you know, it's your job, right? It doesn't take the joy out of it, does it?
Well, I've been in publishing for 25 years, so I'm used to reading books for a living, and I still absolutely love it.
Oh, good. So it doesn't become sort of part of the job and therefore mundane.
No, and of course, what's so interesting when you do a job like this is you read books you wouldn't otherwise normally read. You know, you have to go way outside your comfort zone and the books that you've kind of traditionally read for pleasure, and you find out so much more. So much more when you get to read all manner of books, non-fiction, fiction, memoir, biography, children's books. It's brilliant.
So do you know that's had exactly the same effect on me? I do some moderating for the Emirates Literature Festival. And this year I read Kate Humble's book on walking, which is non-fiction. And I never, ever read non-fiction. But it got me, you know, it got me reading it. And do you know, it stayed with me. I went for a really long walk this morning. And I think that's why, because I read that book. So it's actually changed my behaviour. Which is fantastic.
That's brilliant to hear, actually.
So tell me, 2020 has been an interesting year. I put interesting in inverted commas, hasn't it?
It has. I think turbulent is the word. And in the book trade, it has been quite an extraordinary year. We were incredibly lucky with the Literature Festival. We were one of the last events that carried on being live, and as you would normally expect. And it was a massive celebration of literature. And after that, you know, first of all, Bologna Book Fair cancelled, then London Book Fair cancelled, then the various different festivals around the world, did extraordinary jobs going online. So we still got our literature, but it was just done in a very different way. And it's been a year of massive change and upheaval, and that's been reflected in what's happened in publishing as well. So the books that, you know, we've got to read and that are out this year and coming out next year really reflect sort of the times that we've had, and I think that's really interesting.
Have they changed that quickly? That's quite interesting, because I imagine if you finished a novel and it was ready to go to your editor in February of this year, it could have quickly felt out of date.
Well, what's so interesting, so one of the biggest books of this year is Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, which won the Women's Prize and has been, you know, highly acclaimed. It's wonderful. It's the story of what happened to Shakespeare's wife. It's the story of when she endures the death of their son to plague. And so it's something that people immediately connected with because of what's been happening here. So, you know, it's extraordinarily pertinent to the times. One of the other big books that I came out this year, very early this year in February, was The Art of Contagion by Adam Kaczorski. Now, it's not necessarily specifically about medical viruses, but it talks about viruses and how they spread across the world and how contagion spreads and what we can do about it. So extraordinarily topical books were already here, and of course they were the ones that spread, that came out and became so well known in this year. And those are both books that I would thoroughly recommend people to read if you haven't already.
Do you know, I haven't read either, but they are very lucky, prescient authors, because I know how hard it is for authors now it has been for years in the market at the moment, with so much available and so many people buying books now on the Kindle and having to do sort of cut price deals and things like that. So how about, I mean, I read a huge amount this year. It basically got me through lockdown along with, you know, television, like that, you know, the Tiger King and things like that. But which are the sort of big prize winners that you think deserved their prizes? Which were the best novels from your perspective?
Yes, well, Hamnet absolutely deserved everything that it won. The book was recently won by a book called Shuggie Bane by Douglas Stewart, who's another new writer set in Glasgow in Scotland, which is a heartbreaking and beautiful book about a 1980s childhood. So unexpectedly specific, but really, really beautiful, beautifully written and thoroughly deserving what it gets, and is one of the top books across the list this year. We've been incredibly lucky in Dubai to have Avni Doshi, the author of Burnt Sugar, which I was a shortlist of the Booker Prize and really highly acclaimed and thoroughly deserved as well. So that is something that I recommend people read if they haven't already. The other books that came out this year that were huge. Hilary Mantel finally completed the Thomas Cromwell trilogy.
Yes.
The Mirror and the Light.
I'm halfway through it.
Are you? I haven't read it yet because it is very long and I've had many, many books to read, but I am saving it up and I'm really looking forward to finishing off the trilogy, even though I know what's coming. I think it's going to be fantastic.
So, do you know, it is a wonderful, wonderful book, but if you're even remotely sleepy when you lie in bed to read it, you will fall asleep because it's beautiful, but it's not an easy read. You do have to keep your focus.
But I
really recommend it. It is wonderful. So far.
Another book that was in the prize winning in the shortlist of many prizes this year was The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu, which is surprisingly, it's a novel set in Ethiopia in 1935, and it takes us back to the first real conflict of the Second World War and about the women soldiers who were kind of left out of the historical record. It's written by a woman whose grandmother was actually caught up in this war, and so she's brought this to life in a novelization, but it's absolutely gripping and, you know, thoroughly deserves its place on the books of the year this year. So that's The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu.
So it's interesting that you've mentioned there a theme that does seem to run through literature of this sort of the last sort of 2 years, which is the sort of writing of history, but from a female perspective, because, of course, that's exactly what Macbeth is as well. Although, obviously, it's not history, it's fiction.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And we do see, I think that, you know, there has been a surge in women's stories being told and told very well. And one thing that's been very interesting this year is, I know you mentioned earlier on that, you know, people, authors have had struggling always to get published and to get attention. And that did cause problems this year because we had so many novels about to come out, debuts and so on, that would have had their publicity lined up and the bookshop sales ready to go. But despite all that, book sales have gone up. So
wow.
People are reading and reading more. I mean, that's happened worldwide. So print books, ebooks, of course, audiobooks are thriving again. And I think that's a really interesting thing that people have rediscovered reading during lockdown, which is an absolute joy for those of us who work in the business and have spent our lives trying to get more people reading. It is absolutely brilliant.
That is hugely encouraging. Annabelle Corton, I think it must be Annabelle Corton, although she hasn't added her surname, who obviously is also involved with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, has written in saying, we discussed Hamlet in our book club and generated a wonderful discussion. Isn't it interesting how we divided into two camps in lockdown? Those who wanted to read Contagion and plague-related fiction, and those who wanted total escapism. And that's so interesting because, oddly enough, my husband and I watched Contagion, you know, the movie, right at the beginning of lockdown. And, you know, I wish I'd fallen into the other camp because it completely panicked me and freaked me out. And so in some ways, I was the escapist, I think, in this situation.
Yes, well, there's been some fantastic escapist fiction as well. Some of the best, my favourite books that I've read this year have been crime novels and romance, because you need to get away, don't you?
Yes.
I think the absolute runaway bestseller hit in the UK, and I hope it's coming across the world, is The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman, which I don't know if you've read that, but he is a TV presenter, pointless quizman. He has written the most wonderful book about a series of murders set in a retirement home. And it is, he just captures the setting, the characters, and the mystery absolutely beautifully. And it sold something like 45,000 copies in its first week and went on to take the number one slot week after week and the number one slot at Christmas. I think it outranked Barack Obama's book, which is extraordinary. But it's one of those books that thoroughly deserves its success. And if you listen to the audio edition, there's a wonderful interview between him and Marion Keyes at the very end, which is utterly delightful.
Wow. So, I mean, what I really like about talking to you about getting a nice list of books is because whenever I go onto, for example, Amazon or into the bookstores, I'm deeply suspicious of the books that are the top sellers, because I know that there's all these promotions going on where some people give away their books for free in order to be at the top of the list, or they give them away for only 99p. And you just don't know. Sorry, that's in English monetary values. So that's like six dirhams. And you don't know whether it's, you know, you don't know if it's actually really a popular book or whether it's just a cheap book. One of the questions I've wanted to ask you about is, you know, some of the novels or non-fiction books that you think have basically given context to the year. We heard a little bit there from you about the Hamlet book, which of course is, you know, to do with loss. But how about, there were obviously those big marches against racism in the US. You know, it's been really quite an extraordinary year from a news perspective.
It has, and actually the Black Lives Matter movement has really led to, I think, a reassessment within the publishing industry about diversity and access. I mean, they've got a long way to go still. But there was a real surge in books examining race and society in both fiction and non-fiction. So you had, for example, a book which I thoroughly recommend, really found very, very interesting, René Edo Lodge's Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, became the first book to top the overall top 50 chart by a black British woman. And at the same time, Bernardine Evaristo, you mentioned her book Girl,
yes,
Woman, Other, which is wonderful. And I was thinking, because it came out just last year, maybe I couldn't mention it, but I'm glad I've had a chance because I loved it. You know, she topped the fiction chart. And then you had Candace Carty-Williams' book Queenie, which is a wonderful, heartbreaking, romantic, beautifully written book about a single girl in London trying to make it, and that was Book of the Year this year. So this is new and this is different, and there's a lot of publishing companies trying to work on diversity and inclusivity where they have really been not doing brilliantly in the past. So it's a start, but what has happened is, of course, people turn to books when they want to find out about something, and there is an amazing wealth of books out there to read to learn about, you know, what we need to talk about and how we need to change society. So in terms of that, it's been quite a sea change, and let's hope it continues. I think there are the other contexts of how things are changing in the world, and also, in fact, who's going to be appearing at the Literature Festival is Amin Maalouf, and his latest book, Adrift, is a fascinating story of how we've got to where we are. and where we're going. It's a kind of an analysis of the global crisis and how society and communities and civilizations are drifting apart, what we need to do about it, but also mixing in his own story, which is fascinating, of you know, where he's lived between Egypt and Lebanon and France, and what the impact has on him personally, as well as what he can see with sort of a foot in both camps. So that was an absolutely fascinating read, which I would recommend to everybody. And then reading it alongside a book like Humankind by Rutger Bregner, which is sort of providing the opposite point of view. It's about how we do have in a society is the innate goodness and cooperation. And in fact, if you drill through and look at where people have come together, there is a lot of it about, and we can do more to save it. So Rutger talks about where people changed society, whether that's through democracy, suffrage, marriage equality, you know, radical and dangerous opinions that actually people pushed forward and made happen. And he also does a brilliant debunking of a whole lot of psychological experiments that we take as read that actually weren't necessarily as accurate as they think they are. So if you want, that's a sort of more of an uplifting read about society, which is a really interesting counterpart, because we've got to accept the reality of where we are. We've also got to look at how we can improve. So those two books are really interesting to have a look at as well.
Flora, it's always a bit of a run, a fast run through the list of the books that you like. I'd really love to get your list and put them up on our Instagram account, at DMII1038FM. If you want to get in touch and tell me what your favourite book of the year is, that's one way of doing it, or you can get in touch on 4001 or download and use that free Messenger app. Lovely Etna Trainers got in touch saying, The Thursday Murder Club is a magnificent read, a real page-turner and beautifully written. Annabelle says, I love it that when people asked Hilary Mantel what's next after The Mirror and the Light, she basically said, I might have a bit of a rest. And I'm not surprised, because honestly, her latest book is absolutely enormous. Flora, a pleasure to have you on the line. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Send them through. I feel that there was more to say, so let's put it online so everyone can read them. And also, I wasn't making notes, and I want to catch up on some of the books that you just mentioned.
Of course. Thank you very much. Thanks. And Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. That was Flora Rees, Head of Programming for the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I hope you've enjoyed listening. Make sure you make a note of those books of the year for 2021. And feel free to tune in live from 2 p.m. every weekday afternoon.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.